Welcome to Heel to Heel, where we have women talking business. This is the Heel to Heel show, broadcasting every week, where we are interviewing some of the top female business owners in and around Atlanta, Georgia, and really all over the world when you look back on all of the wonderful guests that have graced the show over the years. Today, I have an excellent show planned for you, so thanks so much for tuning in. First up, I'm going to introduce you to Natalie Bradley, who is the creator of the Bride Attraction System and BrideAttraction.com. Natalie's going to tell her story of how, after owning and operating one of the most successful wedding planning businesses for 6 years at a pretty young age, she started getting asked by hundreds of other wedding professionals to teach them how she rose to success so quickly and easily. From that, the Bride Attraction System was created, and Natalie has now become known as the Bride Attraction Expert, educating thousands of wedding professionals all over the world on how to attract more brides, make more money, and have more freedom to enjoy it. So, welcome, Natalie, to the Chic Perspective Show here. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm very appreciative. Thank you so much.
So, how did you decide to get started in the business? First of all, in the wedding planning business, and then talk a little bit how it evolved from there.
Okay, well, actually when I was in college at the University of Georgia, I was studying to be a speech pathologist, of all things, and I actually ended up losing my voice and had a vocal disorder for 6 months and had to go through speech therapy, which was the best thing that could have happened to me because I realized I would not make it if that's what I actually pursued in my life, and it was not fun, and I actually fell into event planning by accident by volunteering at a local nonprofit called Safe Campuses Now as a student, and didn't even know event planning was a career that you could have at the time. And I did tons and tons of internships, and I worked for free for everybody that you could think of. And I landed a really great job actually in Roswell, Georgia, right after I graduated with a gorgeous facility that's no longer there called Lick Skillet Restaurant. And
Oh, yeah.
I remember
great.
That place. And I was their event coordinator and quickly promoted to event director when they fired everybody else in the department at the age of 21. And I did several hundred events right out of college my very first year. And my husband and I got married, and we actually decided that we missed Athens, and we decided we were going to leave Atlanta and go back to where we met one another. And when we moved to Athens, I saw a niche market that wasn't being fulfilled, and I saw brides that they weren't getting the help that they were looking for through like a full-service event planning and design company. There were a lot of gaps there. And so when I was 23, and it was actually 8 years ago now, I decided to start my company. It was called Soiree at the time, and we later rebranded as Natalie Bradley Events, and it was awesome. But what happened, and this is kind of what led to the organic progression where Bride Attraction was born, you know, I had this crazy desire to plan and design gorgeous weddings and events for people who couldn't do it for themselves the way that they wanted to. And at the same time, I had no knowledge of marketing or sales, and so nobody was calling me. And
business was a little slow. So what did you do?
It's kind of essential to have business to, you know, have a business. And so I camped out at Barnes & Noble, and I started testing marketing strategies and sales strategies. And the wedding industry is different, so I threw a lot of things out, and I started figuring out what worked. And I went from literally being over $100,000 in debt to making over $100,000 in less than 12 months in my business. And that was awesome. And then because we're in Athens, the University of Georgia asked me to start coming to speak and lecture. And as I did that, you know, wedding professionals were coming to me asking for help and, you know, getting a lot of, you know, help in those ways. And that's actually how Bride Attraction was created organically by teaching people how to market and sell to brides, first through the university system, and now we work with people literally all over the world.
Okay, so I've got to know more about how you managed this great swing between being, you know, in debt and the phone's not ringing to all of a sudden all these brides are attracted to you and your company. What do you think was part of the secret behind how that happened?
The biggest secret that I discovered was to just be myself and to create the business around me as opposed to what everybody else was doing within the industry and copying them. That was the biggest defining moment for me because, you know, I think that business owners, especially women across, you know, whatever industry we're in, we all tend to try and follow the leader and assimilate. And that's actually, to me, that's the biggest kiss of death you could do for your business is to stop being yourself. So that's huge.
So how do you think your business is unique from other competitors in the marketplace?
Well, for Bride Attraction, the biggest difference with what I'm doing in teaching marketing to brides and everyone else is that I've been through it. I've been, you know, to rock bottom and back up and experience what it feels like to make all the wrong choices and mistakes and then also figure out by trial and error, you know, what makes it work. And one thing that really differentiates myself from most people is that I've also discovered how to specifically target high-end and affluent brides. And I haven't actually met anyone so far that teaches similar things that I do that has been able to charge $10,000, $20,000, and even $50,000 just on one wedding as a wedding planner. So that's really my niche.
And that's a fantastic niche to be in. Now, what were some of the challenges that you faced in getting to this point?
Probably one of the biggest things, and it's still kind of interesting because I'm still in kind of a man's world, so to speak. You know, most speakers and experts in this industry, they're men, and they're still following the old marketing and sales model of, you know, the traveling salesman to a lot of degree. And so I think people still, they have continued and still look at me as, oh, aren't you cute?
Right, because you're young and you're a woman. So how have you, I mean, I could see that that could feel like being at a disadvantage in certain situations, but it sounds like you've actually found a way to turn it around and turn it into a strength. How do you think you did that?
Honestly, I think it gives me ammunition, Elizabeth. It's, you know, it's one of those things where it used to really annoy me, and now I'm like, oh, thank you, you know, because, you know, they think that I'm just going to come bebop in there and have no substance whatsoever and just smile at everybody. And then usually, you know, when I show them everything that I have to put on the table, they want to do a joint venture with me afterwards. So, you know, it's, I think that it's just embracing who you are. And if you're young, you know, for me, I'm always going to have a baby face and I'm always going to look younger. And I'm a very outgoing, positive person. And for a lot of people, that's, they look at that as a flaw or, you know, being too Pollyanna. But to me, you know, again, it just goes back to being who you are. And so that's one of my biggest assets. And what's made me successful is just always looking for the positive in every situation and overcoming it because of that.
Now, Natalie, you talk about being the client magnet and how to get, you know, brides magnetically to be attracted to you. What are some of the things that you teach people in the wedding industry that allow them to get this magnetic power and start attracting more brides into their business?
Sure. Well, first and foremost, I tell people to look at what their strengths are. What is it that they bring to the table? And a lot of times it's not the obvious. You know, people can say, I'm a great planner, I'm a great photographer, I'm a great caterer. But really what people are drawn to more than that are usually the essences of your personality. You know, what is it that people tell you that you're so great at doing, that you're so great at providing? Even friends, family, ask them what they love about you the most. And that's a really great place to begin. And then make sure that you're niching yourself. Specialize in whatever that may be for you. So for some people, You know, in my business, it was specializing in full service event planning and design. I really like to do it from start to finish, and that was a specialty for me for the high-end bride in Northeast Georgia. I actually started ignoring Atlanta as my marketplace because everyone else was marketing in Atlanta, and I realized that everyone was ignoring the rest of the state. So I was like, hey, why don't I go there where nobody else is? And that was a really smart move. So sometimes it's going for the not so obvious as far as niching yourself. So it can be geographically concerned. It could even be culture or religion based, but niche yourself in some way. I always niche to be rich. You know, someone who specializes always makes more than someone who's, you know, a jack of all trades or a generalist. And so that's really, really key. And then of course, position yourself in the marketplace because people like to surround themselves with others who they see as either an influencer or some sort of local celebrity status, or just an expert status of some sort. You know more than they do, and you've got to get people to know that, whether that means leaving your house or getting on social media and pumping your information out there into the marketplace.
How much of your business is built around web-based marketing, the internet, social media, versus kind of the grassroots guerrilla being out there to get known?
Well, I would probably say, you know, for startups, I tell people that 60% needs to be, at least 60% needs to be the grassroots knocking on doors kind of campaign, and 40% is online. And then actually as you get more and more established, I found that it's more like 90% is online and 10% is offline. But you've got to get people to know you as a real human being before you try that virtual an online approach, because it just doesn't work as quickly as the old school approach of, you know, just really shaking hands and knocking on doors works. So
that's good advice.
Yeah, it's
now,
a good recipe.
Another thing that you had mentioned is the magic of using your story in mm-hmm. business. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about what you mean by that and how people can use their story to sell in business.
Sure. Well, there's kind of a marketing saying that says facts tell, but stories sell. And, you know, even look at, let's talk about BP, actually, because BP has been in the news a lot, you know, over the last year or so. And so a lot of people were really angry and even hate BP because of what they did to the dolphins and the ocean and the environment with the oil spill. And so you can even see BP coming on radio, on TV, print ads, you name it, and they're putting stories out there. They're having mom-and-pop businesses talk about how BP, thank God they came in and they hired us to feed the fishermen and the workers who were cleaning up the oil spills, or we would have gone under. Story after story after story like that. So they're even embracing the negative and making it positive and turning it to recover their reputation. And the same works for small businesses and solo businesses like ours, where you really put yourself into your business, because people, it really boils down to this, people buy from people, not businesses, even BP. They're trying to create a more human side. So if you can put your story into your business, that's really where the magic happens. So, you know, as a wedding planner, I grew up for 13 years with a single mom who owned her own interior design business, and I learned by watching her how to design. I don't have a degree in design, but I learned because I was like a sponge as a child watching her. You know, she would pull all-nighters at the Street of Dreams in Atlanta and all these show houses, and I'd have to take my little Caterpillar sleeping bag and sleep there because nobody was at home to keep me. And I would watch her accessorize and decorate, and I would say, Mom, why are you doing these things? And I would learn. And so I brought that to the event planning table. And then even when my husband and I got married, I was already an event planner, but we didn't have our dream wedding because I didn't know who I was. And I didn't even think to ask my husband who he was and what he wanted. And I used to be afraid to tell that story, but I actually found when I started incorporating that into telling brides, hey, look, you can know how to do everything by the book like I did, and you can still have a cookie-cutter wedding that's not your dream simply because you don't know who you are and you don't know how to tap into that and then translate it into an event. And so once I embraced my story, flaws and all, brides actually started flocking to me because I'm a human being. Nobody identifies with perfection. They identify with human beings who have a real story, a real connection, a real triumph also. So that's really where the magnetizing of your clients comes into being, because people buy from people that they can relate to.
Well, thank you, Natalie, for sharing all of that great information with us today. I can certainly see why people are buying from you, and I want all of our listeners to go check out your website, which is brideattraction.com, and they can also find you on Twitter. Anywhere else you want to meet up with people?
They can come to Facebook, too. Our fan page is Bride Attraction Marketing to Brides.
I'd love to connect.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Well, thanks for sharing your chic perspective and all of your success. And we wish you much future success. And maybe we'll have you back on the show sometime.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I'm so honored. I really appreciate it.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, next up, I've got another fabulous, fierce female entrepreneur to introduce you to. Miss Laura Beering, who is the founder of True Voices, has been told that she has an infectious zeal. And having met her now in the studio, I can vouch for that. An infectious zeal for taking daily risks and for coaching people who want to do enlivening work and live inspired lives. Laura works with individuals, partners, and teams who are ready for radical, authentic success, success their way. Her clients learn to take risks from the heart, both big and small, in order to reach their goals, dreams, and create realities that rock. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, it's a thrill to have you on, and I want to start off by just finding out more about how you got started down the path of being a success coach and how you got to this point in your career.
Wow. Well, thank you. It's a long story, so I'll try to truncate it somewhat. This is actually my third career, and I think I've landed because I am enjoying it so much. Why do anything else? But my first career was as an opera singer. And I never
really
hit the big time, yes. I never hit the big time, but all my training is in classical voice. I have a bachelor's and master's in voice from Rice University in music. And then I came to Atlanta to make my fame and fortune, which didn't happen overnight.
Surprisingly
enough. Can you believe
it?
Yes. And so I got what we call a real job at a law firm. And so my second career was as a legal recruiter in a large international law firm here in Atlanta. And I thought I would be there 6 months, maybe a year, until my opera career took off. And I was there almost 13 years. And while I was there, I got introduced to a book called The Artist's Way. And if you don't know it, it's a book about uncovering, discovering your creativity. Are you familiar with it?
I am, yes. It's
yes,
a great book.
It is. And it changed my life. And I found out that not only was I more than a singer, but that I was creative in all kinds of ways, and that we all are. And that's the bottom line here, that we are creating our realities with every choice, with every breath. And we might as well choose the ones we want rather than the lives we don't want. So I was teaching, I became what I call an artist's way evangelist. And I was teaching everyone I knew the artist's way and thought everyone should take it. And I decided that that's what I wanted to be when I grew up, was an artist's way facilitator. And I realized that I probably couldn't make a living at it. So I felt really excited when people started asking me to work with them privately on their creative goals and dreams. So I very cleverly started calling myself a creativity coach. Now, this was in 1999, and I thought I was just so brilliant at that. And then I found out that there was a whole profession called coaching. Now
I thought I had just made it up.
Yeah, I really did. I was so proud of
myself.
That's great. So then I loved it so much, and when I found out that it was a profession, I decided I'm going to get trained and certified and do it the right way. And so I left the job at the law firm in part-time in 99 and full-time in 2001 and got trained and certified and have been coaching ever since.
Okay, so who are your clients? Kind of give me a thumbnail sketch of what somebody is going through at the point when they reach out and they want to find their true voice.
Okay, well, that's kind of it. I have a challenge in that finding my clients isn't about necessarily about age, although sometimes it is. I would say maybe 35 to 60. Generally, women are able to admit that they aren't living the life they really want to be living or the one they thought they would be living. Not that some men can't do that, and I have some delicious male clients, don't get me wrong. But and it's not always a demographic in terms of the kind of professional, although I do work mostly with professionals either in the creative arts or in service industries like lawyers and accountants, engineers, that sort of thing. Although, again, I love that she said niche to be rich, but my niche is actually people who are waking up saying, wow, is this really all there is? Or where am I in this picture? This is my life, but where do I fit in? And when does it get to be my turn? And not in a egotistical, selfish way, but just kind of having their eyes opened, either through circumstances or just awareness that things either haven't turned out like they had hoped, or they, like she was saying, like Natalie was saying, they didn't really know themselves at all, and they're just kind of flowing along the stream, going with the flow, like what their parents told them to do, or what their, you know, teachers or ministers or even just the culture made them think was appropriate, and they're wondering what might be different if they did it their way.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, it's pretty powerful life transformation kind of stuff that you're talking about in terms of deciding to go after a bigger, bolder vision of your life.
I will say, I'm sorry to interrupt, I will say that people often come to me because they think that they want a career change. And sometimes they do. A career change is what's most appropriate. But that's what a lot of people feel they can justify paying a coach for, is something around their work, because, you know, it's money related.
That makes logical left brain sense.
Yes, exactly. But then they get into my office or on the phone with me, and we discover together that it's more about who they are, just like Natalie was saying in the previous interview, that it's about finding out who they are at the core, what their values are, what's most important to them, and what their dreams are. As fuzzy and woo-woo as that sounds, we all have them. And that our dreams are not cruel jokes, that they are literally signposts to help guide us along the way. And if we will honor those things, we're much more likely to live them than if we just put them aside and don't honor them.
Well, that sounds pretty inspiring. Now, you also have a new book that just came out at the end of last year. It's called The Risk a Day Journal, 28 Days to Being You Out Loud. And I love this you out loud. Laura also brought these awesome bracelets into the studio. I'm going to slip mine on. Hmm. Tell me about Be You Out Loud and what that means to you.
Well, it means a lot of things. It's I like it that it's very short, first of all, because it means literally be who you are, you know, be. It means be you. Take up the unique space that is yours and only yours in the global puzzle. Be you out, meaning alive and taking up that space, really filling up that space, speaking your truth, owning your personal power. And then out loud is not just the speaking it, but claiming it and leading others through example to do the same.
And the Risk a Day Journal, and you also have that an online component to the Risk a Day as well. Now, what made you decide to write this book and talk a little bit about, because it's a very comprehensive guide that you've put together for this process of kind of figuring out who you are and living more authentically as that person.
It is. As you can tell, it's kind of hard to talk about transformation because it's different for every person. But this is a process that every person can take to begin to both go more deeply inside, to discover what their values are, to discover or rediscover their dreams, and then to move toward them on a daily basis. So I've been using these tools, this particular tool, the Risk a Day, myself and with clients for a good while. And I thought, you know, this is just too valuable, too rich not to be telling other people about. So I just started writing down the kinds of things I heard myself saying to clients on a regular basis, why they should do it, why they should take risks, what constitutes a risk, what they should do when they're afraid, how to determine what risks, how big or how small to take them, and just basically put it in the book, and then put a bunch of, one of my favorite parts about writing the book was gathering the quotes. So every day of the 28 days has two quotes from some famous people, some not so famous people, about being courageous and stepping outside the box and honoring your dreams and following your heart and all that. So that was very fun. And actually, even before I wrote the book, I started the Risk a Day blog. And on the Risk a Day blog, I have probably 28, 30 women writing every day, or mostly every day, about a risk they've taken. Now, we don't have 30 bloggers every day. We have one person who's assigned to each day. Anyway, and they are they're just women like you and me who are out and about either teaching or retired or have kids or divorced or any kind of job. And they are looking at what risks they are taking intentionally and how they're growing from that, and what they're learning and sharing that with the readers.
So I love this idea of risk, and I want to go a little deeper here to talk about what are some of the risks that people should be taking, because a lot of times, especially women, are told don't take risks.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Risk is not good. Now, you know, of course, I am a businesswoman, mm-hmm. and all business people know that, you know, you don't get reward unless you take risk. Mm-hmm. That is sort of the essence of the economic conundrum, is that rewards only come when a risk has been taken. So why, in your profession, is it so important to encourage people to take risks? And give us a little example of, you know, what are the kinds of risks we should be considering taking?
Okay, great. So before I get to the what are the risks, I want to make a couple of distinctions that I make in the book, too. And that is, what is a risk in terms of how I'm talking about it? There are three things that make it qualify for a risk. One is, it's about something you want. So you ask your heart, or however you go about discovering what it is you want. I mean, who really needs to be probed to say what they want? We all know what we want to a certain degree. There's something we want. So it has a degree of desire. And I like to say heart's desire, because the more you really want it, the bigger a risk it is. The second thing is, there is an element of fear to taking
it. Okay, so there's the desire, but then there's
the element of fear. And the fear actually comes from the third component, which is the element of an unknown outcome. If you don't care, if you don't really want it, then, and you don't know the outcome, then what's the point? I mean, you're either going to do it or you're not, or whatever. I mean, I'm not saying that very well, but if you have these three components, it's a risk. Period. And then you also said about being a businesswoman, there's risk and there's reward. And I like to talk about, there are actually four R's. There's taking the risk. And as long as the risk is intentional and you take it, you're rewarded, regardless of the outcome.
It's that easy.
Yes. That's what I call, that's how you build the courage muscle, which is our heart. You know, courage comes right from the word for heart. And so it, to simply honor our promises to ourselves, to simply say, I'm going to do this because I want it, and even though I'm afraid and I don't know how it's going to turn out, and then do it, we build confidence. That's exactly right. That's where the subtitle of the book comes from. We build confidence. We build courage. We get our hands more around the creativity of our own lives. So there's risk, and then there's reward, and then there's result. So we get the result we get that we're not going to get if we don't take it. We may get what we want. We may get something we didn't. Like I like to say, we may get the desired outcome, or we may get something we didn't desire. And even in the didn't desire, it could be better or worse. So the chances of us getting something, at least in the direction of what we want, are much greater than if we just sit on our butts. Yeah. So, okay. The kinds of risks that I've heard other people talk about. Sometimes it's as simple as, and I say simple, but I don't mean that in a minimizing way. Sometimes it's as simple as saying, I don't want to eat Mexican food tonight. You know, we all have friends, where y'all want to go to dinner or whatever. And everybody said, let's go to Mexican. And if you just had Mexican last night, you don't want to go to Mexican, right? But if you're somebody who's always just gone along with the flow and you say, I'd rather eat Chinese, for some people, that's a big deal. For other people, it's asking for a raise, telling your spouse that you're bored, taking 30 minutes for yourself in the morning before you feed your kids or your dogs or whoever else lives in your household. Some of the risks that if you want to turn to the back, there's a list of 111 risks. And I just picked 111 because I liked the number. But that's 111 of the risks I have taken. And some of them are small and some of them are not so small. One of the ones I talk more in depth about in the book itself is that I asked the mayor of Decatur out for coffee. And he's a very nice guy, but I was so scared. Like, what would happen? What if he said no? What if he thought I was stupid? What if he told people that I thought, you know, I was somebody who thought that she was worth going to coffee with the mayor? Or what if he said yes and I made a fool of myself? Or what if he said yes and he ended up loving me and actually hired me to do some work and then I failed? You know, all the what ifs are out
on
there.
On and on, right.
Yes, but I did that and
you
it turned out great.
Them and
I
you
did.
Stepped out there and took the risk.
I did. Another one that I did intentionally, and I always get some raised eyebrows from this, but I did some nude modeling for life drawing and sculpture classes.
Cool.
Yeah, I haven't been on very good terms with my body much of my life. And I happened to see a play about a woman who was a life drawing model. And I thought, wow, how powerful that would be to see how other people see our bodies as art, even.
Right.
So I called up Georgia State and I said, do you have any classes that need models? And I did it. And the life drawing classes weren't as fun, to tell you the truth, as the sculpture, because in the life drawing, you can't see what they're doing while you're up there modeling.
Right.
But in the sculpture classes, you can watch them because it's I was on a platform in the middle of this giant warehousey studio thing, and it moved around it in a circle ever so slowly.
Oh my goodness.
So that the sculptors who were standing around me all could see me from all sides.
What courage this took.
Well, here's what's so cool about it. As I went around, I got to see what they were seeing.
That's
and
really
let's
neat.
Say there were 12 sculptors. They saw me 12 different ways. And I got to say, you know, I get to decide how I get to look at my body. And anyway, it was a big thing for me at the time. And
absolutely.
Yeah, I recommend it if anybody, you know, wants to do it. But those are a couple of risks. And I think it's really about just honoring yourself in small and big ways to move in the direction of who you are. And if you don't know who that is, just take a tiny risk and then you'll be rewarded. Number one, like I said, you'll be more courageous, but you'll also know something about whether or not you liked it, you got closer or further away. You can begin to start to calibrate what your risks are from that moment on.
Well, this is just an incredible system and process for living a lot more out loud and a lot more courageously. I definitely encourage everyone to come check out the book. Where can people find the book?
It's on theriskadayjournal.com, theriskadayjournal.com. No hyphens, no dashes, nothing like that, just all one word.
And get inspired by all of these great stories from Laura and all these other wonderful women out there that are living more out loud every day.
Yes, and a few delicious men as well.
Very nice. Well, Laura, we're almost out of time here. I want to ask you if you would share one tip with our listeners in terms of a chic tip that you would put out to someone else who's trying to achieve more courage and creativity and business success as well. What's your chic tip for us today?
Wow. Well, narrowing it down to one is difficult. So I'll say you've already heard take a risk a day. You've already heard be you out loud. So the last one I'll say is the four L's. Learn about who you are. Take the time and learn about who you are. Love who you find. No matter what it is you learn, love that person. The third one is live the life that only you are here to live. And the fourth is then lead the world by example to do the same.
So well put. Beautiful advice. Thank you so much for coming on. Everyone, if you want to check out Laura's websites, it's truevoices.com and riskaday.com. thank you. And thank I would you. Love to have you come back on some other time. You have an inspiring story thank and a great you. Message, and I wish you all of the best.
Thank it's you. Same pleasure. To you. Yes.
All right, guys, this is Elizabeth Gordon, and that's the end of Heal to Heal for this week. Make sure you tune in next Monday, where we'll have another fabulous show for you where women are talking about business. Check out our past episodes at businessradiox.com. And if you want to find out more about my company, Flourishing Business, you can always go to flourishingbusiness.com. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye. Keep on